Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
All right, welcome back to the show. This is episode 325. This week on the program, we're talking about the five-pointed star, whether that's the five-pointed star you typically see, or the pentalpha, or the pentagram, or the blazing star of Freemasonry, or even the star used in the Order of Eastern Star. There's a lot of interesting differences between them all. So this week we've got a conversation about that, where we talk with Frater O and Brother Greg Kaminsky of the Occult of Personality podcast. We had a fantastic time talking about this, its differences, and we had some great insights from both Frater O and Greg Kaminsky. So I do want to say, if you're unfamiliar with Brother Greg's work, please check out the Occult Personality podcast. It's a wonderful show if you're into some deeper aspects of philosophy and mysticism and occult stuff. His podcast is the best, bar none. So check that out. And he's got a great membership section as well, where members get access to some really great content that's kind of additional, gives you further insight into the interviews he has with his many guests and authors. So check that out. I'll have a link back to his program in our show notes, as well as any other notes that we need to host for this episode. After the interview, of course, we have illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison, who comes on with this week's Masonic Minute. It is an excellent episode as usual, and then we'll wrap up. And finally, before we go ahead and get into the interview, I just want to take a moment to remind everybody that this is being released on December 17th, 2017. There will not be a show next week on the 24th, and there will not be a show on the 31st. We're going dark at Whence Came You for the Christmas holiday and for New Year's. However, there will still be content up on Midnight Freemasons going up daily as far as the release schedule goes, typical Monday, Wednesday, Friday posts, and there will still be Masonic Curators, which will go out on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. So you'll still have Masonic content all week long. Just know Whence Came You for those couple weeks. And also don't forget about the Masonic Roundtable. Those will be out as well. And that's it. So let's go ahead and get right into this week's interview. All right, everybody, we're back this week. We've got Frater O on the program and a special guest, Brother Greg Kaminsky of the Occult of Personality podcast. Welcome both of you to the show this week.
Thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to be back. Big fan of the show and always love to talk with you both.
Always a pleasure. Yeah, thanks again for having me back as well.
And thanks for coming on, guys. So this week we're talking about the five-pointed star. Now, this is an interesting topic because there's a lot of things written about the five-pointed star or the pentalpha or the pentagram or the blazing star. And I think, when we were going to do this show, we talked a little bit about this and we decided that in addition to giving good information about these things, and I say these things because they actually are different things. And so we're going to do our best to kind of decipher them, talk a little bit about each one and their significance and why they might have some significance to Freemasonry in some cases. But primarily, we've got a great scholar on the show, Brother Greg, and he's got a wealth of knowledge on a lot of these things, especially symbology. And so I think having him on the program is definitely beneficial for everybody so that we can grasp these things, know the differences, and see how they relate to the fraternity. So first up is the title of the show this week was The Five-Pointed Star. So when we talk about the five-pointed star, a lot of the first allusions to that I've seen that are probably very frequently attributed within Freemasonry on kind of the esoteric side, because a lot of people love to bring this idea of Freemasonry to the mystery school and you end up in Egypt. And so some of the first things that I would suggest is the five-pointed star, literally just a star, you know, written with five lines, which is initially from a deity, which had, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but the deity was depicted as this star was on for its head as a five-pointed star, and it had an allusion to Sirius, or the dog star, which in itself is interesting, and in Mesopotamia, the same thing is true, but they use an 8-sided star. That kind of idea of having this initial depiction is just one element. However, I think that serious idea does carry over into some other iconography in some other systems as well. Do you guys have anything, just the 5-pointed star in general?
There's so much there, it's almost difficult to know where to begin, because the 5-pointed star is really exalted by all of the expounders of the mysteries as the penultimate symbol of the Magi, or of all of the mystery schools, the Gnostic schools. And I think its meanings are, there's multitudes of meaning there. So it depends on what level you want to approach it at, the geometry of it, just the symbolism of it. There's so many different directions you could go. For instance, the whole idea of the pentagrammaton, which is the 5-letter divine name. This corresponds to Yehoshua, which is constructed form of the Hebrew name for Jesus. You find this in Kircher and other Renaissance sources, but it's alluded to even in Pico's 900 Theses when he talks about sort of the proofs of Christianity that you find in Kabbalism. And he mentions this 5-lettered name, but he doesn't actually give it to you. Not to know, he may have been planning to mention it during his actual disputation of these theses, but that never happened. So this seems to be a long tradition just in sort of esoteric Christianity, where you have this construction of a divine name modified from Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh from the Hebrew. So adding the letter Shin for the Holy Spirit in the middle, and basically, that corresponds also with the pentagram, because you can set that those Hebrew letters up around the different points and use it in various ways. So that's just one small slice of it, but there's many different ways you can go at it.
Yeah, I have to kind of, since it's, you talked about the pentagram, you know, first, that's one of the things, and there's so much there. If you just Google pentagram, you get so much information, and you really get just tidbits of it. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of folks out there who have somebody to turn to when something mentions something very kind of cryptic within the descriptions of what these things are. Like if you're reading old Masonic texts or whatever, there are instances where these things are referenced, and they're so, it's like a different language, because it's, they're trying to articulate something that is not able to be articulated very well. But some good examples of things that are able to be articulated, some of its history in the pentagram is used in Babylon. It was used in Greece. There was even reports of the pentagram being found in some ruins in Baalbek, which is pretty intense. It's one of the oldest civilizations on the planet, and some might even say antediluvian. It's used by Wiccans today, similarly like the Christians would use a cross. It actually used to be used by Christians to symbolize the 5 wounds of Jesus. Of course, used in Freemasonry, and I say this loosely, as the emblazoned star, but there's a lot of texts out there that will say, of course, that the blazing star is not the pentagram. So they really separate it. And I'm not sure if that's a product of the time in which it was written, but the emblazoned star does have that key difference of it's a pentagram, but it's flaming, right? So there's some symbology there.
To piggyback off of what you mentioned, in ancient masonry, if you could look at some of the old jewels you can find on eBay from the early 1900s or even the 1800s, you'll have the square and the compasses with the 5-pointed star or pentagram directly in the middle instead of the letter G, which is really fascinating. You know, if anyone listening remembers back to when we did an episode on Mathmagic Land with Donald Duck and geometry, Pythagoreans would use the pentagram as their initiation sign, or, you know, to let people into their society, as well as when you start and trace it back to ancient occultists or alchemists, they would use, you know, 5 different points of the star representing earth, air, water, fire, and of course that last one in the middle, it could be spirit or, you know, the human body.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, Gray had mentioned before we were talking in the green room about the difference between the pentagram and the 5-pointed star. 5-pointed star is literally a line drawing, whereas the pentagram is something wholly different because it has lines that connect them, and we have angles and shapes, which can be attributed mathematically to some divine, quote-unquote, divine mathematical formulas.
So, I mean, if we define the word pentagram, it comes from Greek, penta, meaning five, and gramma, meaning a letter. So it's pretty unique to see the correlations.
There's an interesting correlation there, too, is five letter. As Greg mentioned, the divine name with the five, which is, again, some interesting similitudes there. I mean, maybe they're connected, maybe they're not. But I mean, we as humans tend to find connections where maybe there aren't any, but we're wired to find them. One of the other things that's interesting about the pentagram is that we talked with Dr. Bruce S. Fisher about this a little bit. And in some of my research going along with the word, I had talked to Greg about this, but Bruce really set off an interesting thought process when he mentioned that the pentagram within itself is five angles of 72 degrees. 72 degrees times five was the 360, and the 360 is the circle or the representation of deity, and then overlay the man on top of it. And Bruce was somewhat alluding, I think, to the idea of the divinity of man, which is another interesting concept within the pentagram. The term pentalpha you heard earlier in the program, as I understand it, that really wasn't starting to be used until about the 17th century. But there is an interesting allusion there too that I was reading about in some of the notes before the show relating to a Grecian myth about the pentagram representing five places where the seeds were dropped along Earth in order to spawn the cosmos by Kronos. So there's always, like, no matter where you look, there's some sort of mythology behind a lot of this, which is interesting as well.
Yeah, that is a good point. We'd have to mention, I think, the whole idea of the planet Venus and the way that this shape is also associated with the divine feminine, and the way that viewed from Earth, this the way that Venus sort of appears in a, it's not a pentagram exactly, but it sort of mimics, it looks like a five-petaled flower, really, to be honest with you, which goes right into the whole symbolism of the Rosicrucian rose being equated with the pentagram also. And you can find this in Paul Case and other sources as well that mention it.
Yeah, the Venus element is interesting, right? I mean, it's just due to the zodiacal path that it takes in terms of, yeah, like you said, viewed from Earth, it follows a very specific pattern. And they actually talk about that pretty extensively in the Masonic use of that, is used in the SRICF. It's used to represent the five directions, north, south, west, east, and of course, as Frodero pointed out, the heavens. And they use that symbol of the rose and the cross, but the rose is to really symbolize that idea. There's also some other symbolism that you can look up wherever you look to, like more of a modern mythology of the five-pointed star is found within the Arthurian legends. Within that system, if you're familiar, Gawain, who is one of the knights, basically has a pentagram on his shield. And it's said to represent the five points, or said to represent different qualities: generosity, courtesy, chastity, chivalry, piety. It's really interesting symbol. As it moves through time, it seems to gravitate, and different groups latch onto it and use it for something.
We should definitely talk about which I think directly relates to Freemasonry, is the entire geometry of the pentagram, and the way that this divine proportion is encoded in it. So if you think of a pentagram, the short version, in comparison with the two other subsections of the same line that are bisected there, produce that divine proportion.
The golden section.
Yeah, the golden ratio, which is, that's sacred geometry. That's one of the basis for it. So it's encoded in the pentagram. And I think there's a lot of other esoteric things encoded in it.
Well, speaking of the geometry of it, there's an interesting sort of shape that takes form, the lute of Pythagoras, which is another one of the kind of sacred geometry pieces. It's interesting the way it's set up. It's one of these kind of micro to macro type designs where you guys listening to the show, the best thing I can describe it is almost like stars stacked on top of each other, but you'd have to look it up to really kind of visualize it, I think. Based on golden triangle, I'll just read this straight from Wikipedia. It's pretty cut and dry. It says the loot may be drawn from a sequence of pentagrams. The center of the pentagraphs lie on a line, and except for the first and largest of them, each shares two vertices with the next larger one in the sequence. So if you can imagine that, it just keeps forming like pentagrams, essentially, over and over and over again.
Well, just to go off of the number five, if you don't mind me mentioning off of the science or the mathematics behind it, you know, there's five steps in a certain degree. There's five human senses we talked about. If you look at the fingers, each hand has five. There's always certain points of fellowship. There's also five sides of any pyramid. We always see four, but there's always that bottom one. There's always five orders of architecture as well. Geometry is the fifth science. And when you get into the Scottish degrees, there's the five points of the master. You also, when you get into the sign of human intelligence, usually it's five. And if you look at the lodge in particular, there's five May primary lodge officers. So, you know, five is a very unique number as well. As we mentioned alchemy earlier, and Greg getting into other deeper aspects.
To touch on a bit of you went into masonry, and we'll talk a little bit, I guess, about the blazing star. What's interesting about that is writers will definitely talk about how it's different. And again, I don't know if that's to disassociate from the negative connotation that's kind of been attributed to the pentagram, but the blazing star is this five-pointed star, and it means different things in different degrees. Fourth degree, Scottish Rite, it's reiterated this thing of divine providence. The ninth degree, it's kind of talked about in this way that's allegorical of guidance. And that's something that I would say Thomas Smith Webb kind of influenced that, I think. But also some will say in the ninth degree, it represents beauty. Preston tends to say that it represents the almighty presence. The 28th degree, they just basically call it a symbol for truth, and essentially that man is that symbol for truth. So I think they make this allusion that man and the pentagram are kind of one and the same, and that may just be because we have two arms, a head, and two legs. But this symbol, again, going back into history, is worshipped by a ton of ancient cultures. We have Israelites, Canaanites, and what's interesting, you know, Greg talked about Venus earlier. That star and that symbol, in some respects, in those, I will call them biblical times, seem to represent Saturn. And the farther back you go, you look at the different planets and the different constellations and attributes, and everything's kind of connected in this intricate web of archetypes. So we have Saturn equaling, you know, like Moloch or some other deities. But it's interesting to note that we've got almost three different, entirely different, I'll call them heavenly bodies that this pentagram or five-pointed star is said to represent. You know, we've got Sirius, which is the dog star. It's actually a binary star. We've got Venus and Saturn.
I think you bring up a really good point, and I'm going to make an assertion here, which I think is the natural follow-on from what you said, which is the pentagram by its very nature, because it's essentially you have a triangle and a square, which are shapes, but the pentagram is sort of like a unique shape that comes after them with more angles, and it's different in many respects. And, you know, we mentioned the geometry and all of the symbolism that gets projected onto it. For instance, the Kabbalists had this idea that it represented the microprosopis, or the smaller man. And this is where you get the esoteric Christians get the idea of Jesus being represented by the five-pointed star, the pentagram. And then you have Edward Waite, and I'll just read a brief section of his book on the mysteries of magic where he's talking about the pentagram. And just in this one section, listen to what he says. The G, which the Freemasons place in the center of the burning star, signifies gnosis and generation, the two sacred words of the ancient Kabbalah. It also signifies grand architect, for the pentagram, from whatever side it may be looked at, always represents an A. And he goes on and on, but he's basically talking about how it's representing the grand architect, which is obviously a more macrocosmic god, and it's the microcosmic god, and it's this, and it's that, and it's everything to everybody, and depending on how you look at it. So very amorphous in terms of the sort of meaning you can ascribe to it. And I think that's one of the important aspects of the symbol, because depending on what you're trying to emphasize, it can be used for anything related to the number five. And other things that even aren't.
We tend to gravitate toward these things, and we want to grab anything and put a symbol to it. Not to put it in any bad light on any one particular group of people or society that use this for anything. I think we all derive the teaching that we're supposed to from that thing. But it's interesting. One of the things that I wanted to touch on, because people tend to jump on it quite heavily, is the fact that anti-Masonic or Masonic detractors will consistently post about the Order of the Eastern Star and its use of the pentagram. And they go after it in terms of its orientation. That's something we didn't touch on really, which was there is this idea that the pentagram with the point up is the spiritual over the spirit's victory over matter. And when it's the other way, it's matter's victory over the spirit, or the symbol for Rex Mundi.
Yeah, well, you see, by placing it in, and Waite even says that right after the sentence that I had read, he said, by placing it in such a manner that two of its points are above and only one below, we may see the horns, ears, and beard of the hieratic goat of Mendes when it becomes the sign of infernal evocations.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I think Agrippa says something to the fact that he calls them horns as well, and he talks about the horns stabbing the heavens, you know, in this kind of context where...
Yeah, I mean, this is like the earthiness of earthiness, you know, where living being is embodied in forms that are anything but, you know, heavenly.
So I should correct myself. It wasn't Agrippa. I think it's Eliphas Levi. Who's the guy who basically talked about that?
So that's a legitimate interpretation of the symbol, obviously, right? The fact that the Eastern Star has that as its symbol, which I don't think they have the same intention behind it. Nonetheless, if a symbol means something, I mean, it either means something or it doesn't. And I know it doesn't mean it to the Eastern Star or to Freemasonry in that way, but common usage throughout history, at least in esoteric spheres, it signifies that, and depending on who you talk to, it might be negative or not.
Right.
And it's all open to interpretation as well. So, and that's not to say that there's no absolute truth. It's just that, you know, symbols are, as I said before, they, depending on the way you ascribe meaning to them, they can mean different things. Sometimes the same symbol can mean different things.
So in the Eastern Star, they talk a little bit about, I think it's Rob Morris who's really behind most of that ritual, and they look at the star not as a thing that's upright and up down. It's this thing that's like laying flat. And they say that they talk about the angle of the two points encompassing the east, which is an interesting. I don't know much about it. It's I'm not a member, obviously.
It's almost like an idea of like a mandala. But it's just unfortunate that when it's represented like as a symbol displayed to like on the wall or to the public, it's just oriented that way.
Yeah, it's also interesting, right? I mean, the Church of Satan has theirs, which is trademarked, and it's two points up, and it's got the circle around it, and I think the words Lucifer, Lilith, something along those lines. And for them, it's a good symbol, right? Because they typically, in true fashion of Satanism, it's not necessarily worship of Satan, it's the elevation of man. And so they talk about the here and now, the material is greater, or whatever. So I think for them, it represents this idea of goodness, because that's... For them, what's good, right, is material surroundings and things of that nature.
Yeah. So you're highlighting something important, that the view that you go into, that you view the world with, is going to dictate how you interpret everything.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're looking at, in today's culture, even as much of this stuff that I study, if I talk to my wife about it, or she overhears me talking about the pentagram or Satanism, she's immediately like uncomfortable, even though she knows I'm not necessarily talking about Satan worship. or, you know, whatever it is. It's like everybody has their views on things, and they really do project.
Now, RJ, didn't you have a quote from Morals and Dogma that you wanted to read?
Oh, yeah. We do have a quote from Morals and Dogma.
I think it was the 28th.
Sure. So when the masters in alchemy say that it needs but little time and expense to accomplish the works of science, when they affirm, above all, that but a single vessel is necessary, when they speak of the great and single furnace, which all can use, which is within the reach of all the world, and which men possess without knowing it, they allude to the philosophical and moral alchemy. In fact, a strong and determined will can, in a little while, attain complete independence, and we all possess that chemical instrument, the great and singular athanor, or furnace, which serves to separate the subtle from the gross and the fixed from the volatile. This instrument, complete as the world and accurate as the mathematics themselves, is designated by the sages under the emblem of the pentagram or star with 5 points, the absolute sign of human intelligence. Pike in Morals and Dogma, the 25th degree, Knight of the Brazen Serpent, says of the symbol, "The blazing star in our lodges, we have already said, represents Sirius, Anubis or Mercury, guardian and guide of the souls. Our ancient English brethren also considered it an emblem of the sun. In the old lectures, they said, quote, the blazing star or glory in the center refers us to that grand luminary, the sun, which enlightens the earth and by its genial influence dispenses blessings to mankind."
Well, I mean, you touched on a point there on Sirius. We haven't really delved into just yet, which is referred to many times as the dog star. It actually has 2 stars. Those that aren't familiar with it, that has Sirius A and Sirius B. That dog star is 8.6 light years away. It's pretty amazing. Throughout the eons, you can always find these 7 stars in particular that refer back to the Pleiades or Subaru. It has many names, but it's interesting that Pike references that area in particular.
Well, his use of the word sages is also interesting in terms of that word's use in the societies in which worshipped things like Sirius and Anubis. The word specifically, you can look at what civilization they have, the Apkallu, which I think is from out there in the region of Armenia. Apkallu are the 7 sages. So perhaps, you know, the star in that references the 7 sages, which are, of course, emblematical of 7 liberal arts and sciences, the Watchers, those guys who taught us the arts and sciences, trivium, quadrivium kind of thing. So it is interesting that it could also be this symbol for, you know, absolute knowledge. It's one of the things that Greg said at the beginning of the podcast, or alluded to anyway. It says, Pike in his earlier degree, The Apprentice, says that the blazing star in the center is said to be an emblem of divine providence and commemorative of the star which appeared to guide wise men of the East to the place of the Savior's nativity. He goes on to say that the blazing star or glory in the center refers us to that grand luminary, the sun, which enlightens the earth and by its genial influence dispenses blessings to mankind. Again, just a general quote. They called it also, in the same lectures, an emblem of prudence. The word prudentia means, in its origin and fullest signification, foresight, and accordingly, the blazing star has been regarded as an emblem of omniscience, or the all-seeing eye, which to the Egyptian initiates was an emblem of Osiris.
Well, I mean, we presented a lot of amazing evidence here and facts to build your own conclusions on what the pentagram or the 5-pointed star or blazing star, whatever you want to call it. But since, you know, we have a kind of a round table going on here, I really want to hear your 2 opinions on what this star means to each one of you.
Right on. Well played, sir. Well played. Before I give my answer, because mine might be like painfully simple compared to you and Greg, so I'm going to throw it over to Greg first.
Well, what I think is that we get a lot of symbols ascribed, like symbolism ascribed to this one thing. So to me, that's indicative of the fact that its meaning is very multi-layered. And my belief is, and I haven't really done this myself to try to prove it out, because I think it would involve a significant attention that I just haven't prioritized it that way. But I think if you really analyze it from a geometric perspective, where you really start taking it apart, the angles, the way they add up, the way that the lines and the segments of those lines work and the proportions that you find. I think the secrets hidden in the shape itself are probably the true, or like the doorway to the real secrets of the pentagram. That would be my opinion about it. Because these references that we're all like reading about it are all very grandiose, but they're all kind of superficial. But they're all pointing to like a similar idea, that it's like this idea of, it involves the human perception of reality, basically. You know, the five senses, the way that the number five relates to humanity, and the way that this symbol has been ascribed to this idea of the microprosopis, the lesser god or the smaller man or Yeheshua. And I think it really goes towards that idea of a greater and greater fragmentation of sense perception and knowledge in order to better understand things at a more granular level in a successive or progressive fashion, which is important on a certain level. But then it's got to be balanced out by its opposite, represented by the hexagram, which would be bringing into balance and uniting this desire to know with that which can't be known. So the pentagram is an important symbol, but it has to be seen like with its counterpart as well, I think, in order to properly understand it. That would be my opinion.
Fascinating.
There's no right or wrong.
Nope.
Thank you for sharing, Greg. RJ, would you like me to go or would you like to go?
I mean, I've already kind of talked about, I think I touched on a little bit of what I believe it to be. And I'll just say that I'm a firm believer in what I would call original intent. Is very heavy in my opinion. When I look at something like the five-pointed star, I look at it as it's some sort of iteration of the greatest secret, whether it's newer or older, but properly deciphered probably gives us what we want to know in terms of the biggest secret, right? I mean, it's the answer to what we are, and as Greg said, perception is a key to it. And I think the way it's pushed through history has, you know, it's gravitated towards certain schools, and maybe in those schools it's not necessarily being used, I think, in the same form I would likely see it used in terms, again, of that original intent. Like in Asia, you know, it's ascribed to five sacred things, you know, relating to feng shui and Taoism, and, you know, those five parts or whatever. And so maybe in that culture, those five things also add up somehow to the same conclusion. But I think ultimately it's an amazing conceptual idea in what it is. In the 28th degree, it talks about that it represents truth, and it makes this illusion that, you know, truth lies within man. And so when we study those kind of texts, along with some of the parallel reading you can do with real scriptural texts, things like the Pentateuch, when we read the stories and you read the contextual use of certain words and what they mean, and how we use them today is not necessarily at all what they meant. You bring these things together, and there's something that starts, there's a new story that's being told. And I think regardless if those stories are rehashed or rebranded by any one culture, there's this basis, it's an allegory that's giving us a story, a hidden story. And it's there for the intellectual to find his meaning in that. But I'm also not of the opinion that, like a lot of people say, masonry is a lot of different things to a lot of different people. I mean, I think that's true, but I also think that masonry does have a purpose, a dogma, and there is a singular purpose for it. That's not something I talk about openly on this podcast or whatever. If, you know, listeners are out there one day and you corner me, maybe we'll have a beer and we can talk. But again, masonry is being this journey. It's not for everybody to just get handed the answers. And maybe that's a reason why these things are kind of alluded to and talked about in this grandiose way, as Greg put it, is a lot of descriptors and things. They're trying to guide you to something, and they're all alluding to this thing, and it's just kind of hovering out there in the ether. But if you can conceptualize it, you can grab it, you'll probably figure it out. I mean, at the end of a couple of presentations I've done, I've kind of tested out this idea where I will say something along the lines of, maybe the key to whatever is right in front of your face. And then like a few slides later, I put up an image and I leave it there and I don't say anything. I just wait and then I turn it off. And there's always like one or two guys out of like 100 in the room will come up later and go, I see what you did there. I'm like, did you? But yeah. I would also stress that it's not about finding the answer, like just reading it. Like it's not about that, because that doesn't do you any good. Greg was instrumental in kind of my thought process on what I feel it is. And he didn't just come out and say, it's this. You know, he gave me like some little breadcrumbs that I had to go follow. And it's like, okay. It's one of those times Greg kept me from going nuts, which was good.
Those are the great teachers.
Yeah. Harvard Greg. Thanks, buddy.
Anytime.
Yeah.
Anytime.
How about you, Frotter? What are you thinking about?
Yeah, the more I learn, the less I know. And when you think you have something figured out, it's like an onion. You can, symbolism, the beautiful thing is that nothing can die, right? You struck a chord earlier. Everything's dogma, even Freemasonry. Technically, anything external of yourself is dogma. So anything, any other system that's been created by another mortal or another human being, technically is dogma. So you can read all these books and you can read all this information and retain as much as you want about what other people say. But there's a really good quote from The Matrix where Morpheus says to Neo, there's a difference between knowing the path and walking the path. The beautiful thing about symbolism is you can understand or grasp whatever is presented in that symbol. And for thousands of years on this planet, regardless of any continent, regardless if it's Egyptian, or if it's Inca, or Mayan, or ancient Hindu, or Sumerian, or Greek, you can find the same allegory or same correlations over and over and over if you look for it. For me, when I think about the store, you know, I think about this like ancient term of lux, finesse, nos, agit, which the translation is, the inner light leads us on. And that store is the microcosm. It's all inside of you. And alchemy is great, talks about the elements, but more of the spiritual alchemy, not the physical, tangible. I'm going to take lead and I'm going to physically turn it into gold. No, it's more, for me, I gravitate towards the whole internal process of the internal alchemical process of just making changes inside of yourself consistently to better yourself, to better humanity. Because if you're able to make yourself better, you're able to change the people around you, and those people create ripple effects and so forth and so on. But yeah, I think I'm going to leave it with this one quote Thoreau said best. It takes two to speak truth, one to speak and another one to hear. So that's where I kind of land on.
That's awesome.
Good stuff.
On December 27th, Freemasonry Worldwide celebrates St. John the Evangelist Day. On that day in 1811, a Friday, our brothers at St. Louis Lodge 111 gathered for a feast, and as part of the proceedings, sang a tribute to celebrate the life of St. John. Especially for that occasion, Lieutenant Joseph Cross of the U.S. Artillery wrote the lyrics to the tune of Lochaber No More, a folk tune claimed by both Scotland and Ireland. Frederick L. Billen, a former Grand Secretary of the Grand Lodge of Missouri, recorded the words of the song in his extensive Masonic journal, even though the event took place when he was only 10 years old. Brother Billen's dedication to history allows us the opportunity to celebrate this year's St. John's Day across time, spoken perhaps for the first time since that celebration long ago, with our brothers from 1811. You will pardon me for not singing, as the tune plays in the background. It was simply titled, A Masonic Song. Oh, look at creation with a Mason's bright eye, the grand architect's temple resplendent in light. Its wisdom, its strength, and its beauty outvie the conception of mortals or powers their sight. The circle whose radiance all space cannot bind, for its center is love, almighty in mind. Our vision is darkened, then bend low the knee, and in faith, hope, and charity ever agree. Let the cadence of joy steal soft in the ear, while mystical love rises warm in each heart. The bright jewels of virtue we'll ever revere, and nine times united enshrine our grand art. The evangelist's birth, let our honors proclaim, in fraternity echo St. John's brilliant name, and remember our brother who justly defined the chant of affection, a Freemason's mind. Yes, remember our brother whose birth we now sing, and remember the axioms he gave to our art. Though a brother in darkness, let love still upspring. O, enlighten his soul and pour oil in his heart. That a brother may err, still our Father doth love, and his Son will induct to the grand lodge above. As Masons were bound to toil with each other, then never forsake an unfortunate brother. As spotless as white is the innocent mind, as constant as blue is the soul to the light, whose effulgence ennobles the Freemason's mind when the red beams of love enrapture the sight. Then think of the angle whose square is so true, and the compass which guards and encircles us too. Let not vice our attraction e'er draw, subjecting our passions to a Mason's wise law. Think not, dearest sister, that pride can conspire to exclude your loved sex from the lodges on earth. We fear the bright charms which our love's holy fire would mingle our duties to dissension give birth. The blush of Aurora enkindles the earth, ere the radiant God sheds his light in the west. Your virtues and charms in our hearts are a feast, and Masons are born that the fair may be blessed. Our sparkling goblets let temperance fill with the juice of the grape to all Masons who are free. Their acceptance we drink with fraternal goodwill, and in brotherly love may we ever agree. May their bosoms be bright, their daughters be fair, their passions well governed, their hearts free from care. Their corn, wine, and oil in plenty abound, and their happiness last while the globe shall go round. So, however your lodge celebrates, this is Steve Harrison, on behalf of the Whence Came You podcast, wishing you a festive St. John's Day.
All right, big thanks goes out to illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison for his continued support and his continued contributions to this program, bringing all of us the very best in Masonic education. Thank you so much, Brother Harrison, for all that you do, and we wish you a happy St. John's Day as well. All right, that's it for this week. I just want to thank both, again, Frodero, and thank Greg Kaminsky of Occult of Personality Podcast for coming on the show. Again, no show next week or the week after, but we will have content on just about everything else. Masonic Curators, Midnight Freemasons, Masonic Roundtable, those will all have content. I also want to take this moment and say this has been an incredible year for the show. And I really can't thank all of you enough for everything you've done in supporting this program, whether you bought the pin from our website or you became a contributor or a producer or a fellow from the donations that have come in. It's been fantastic. We've been able to start new things this year and really help spread the light of Freemasonry. And we couldn't do it without you. And it's just been fantastic. So I just want to take a moment here and sincerely, I know I thank you guys all the time, but really, I can't thank all of you enough times to convey how appreciative I am for everything. The listeners, the supporters, you guys are amazing. So with that, I hope you all have a wonderful holiday, have a Merry Christmas, a Happy New Year, celebrate the Yule time, and I'll talk to you all next year, if you can believe that. So, until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.